This sector, actually, it's about issue of skills gap and employability, according to my understanding. However, I found it difficult that when you check the report, there are many issues that relate to human resource department as an issue. I want to check if in this particular sector, is the problem human resource not able to recruit proper people that will be retained by the organization? Because if you go on with the report, even on that big document, there's an issue of resignations and so on. So that is my issue to say, what are the reasons of this particular resignations? Is it people decide to go for pension or what? And then the other issue is on the matter experience, like when I checked on your HR report overview in terms of women, race and sex, in terms of how you have reported, I didn't see the inclusion of youth as part of the report to say at least we've got these young people in the organization. Because as representative of young people in this parliament, these are the things that we would want to play an oversight on in terms of checking that really all of you, are you committed to the transformation agenda? And transformation agenda as well is that one of speaking to many number of young people who are unemployed. And we know that young people are skilled and capable to execute tasks that are being executed by other people. So mine was that, when you are this department, can you look out of the box of the issue of experience vis-a-vis ageism? Because sometimes I believe in this status, you just recruit because a person is a doctorate or PhD, but in terms of experience, you'll find that a young person is more experienced than an elderly person. So in your HR strategy, these are the things that will speak to what is it that you bring into an institution that you don't have. If it's a matter of now, in terms of pensioners, you are in numbers, we hope that when we read your advertisement post, we'll be able to check that at least QCTO now is recruiting for young people specifically on the basis that they would want to speak to the skills gap.
Okay, thank you. You've got another one?
Yeah?
You've got another question?
Yes. But okay. I never said lastly, AJ.
All right,
briefly. Yeah, I think we must, you know, allow us
all right.
to be.
Okay, sorry, briefly.
All right. When you were presenting, you spoke about the intervention that you have planned to work with TVETs, because there was a gap that there was no a serious relationship with them. So I want to check, what would be your plan with regards to you assisting these TVETs in terms of skills, experience, period? Because at times, young people, when they finish with their NQFs, during the period of experiential learning, they would have to go around asking people to say, can you give me that opportunity so that I can get the skills, experience, and so on. So on your plan, can you include that one of ensuring that even if these young people, they don't get experiential learning from other sectors, you as QCTO, we are able to absorb them? Because you can't be, the target of achieving unskilled for four people is a small target. Can you just, you know, pull up your socks in terms of your target? So as a skills gap institution, as custodian of ensuring that at least there's everybody is skilled, you cannot put that 4% target. It's very low as custodians. So the other one is on the issue with regards to your lobbying and advocacy programs, how do you conduct your programs? Because at times you learn to know about your core functions when you are in these particular meetings or when you go via internet. But a person in the rural areas won't relate with whatever that you are doing. So I just want to check what are your programs with regards to advocacy in our communities. And lastly, Chairperson, my input is that if on these reports that you gave us in future, please give us specifics in terms of if you have employed Honorable Bashoff here from Gauteng, can we just see that reflection that this person is from Gauteng and so on, so that when we go to our communities, when we report about the good work that you are doing as you are getting unqualified audits without findings, we are able to say, but there are these institutions where people are actually performing as supposed to, because we have one, two, and so on, people who are employed in these particular institutions. But well done for your audit outcomes. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Nisa. When you talk about employment of youth, I'm looking at the CFO. I'm not sure whether he does fit that category. Seem to be in the age group that you're explaining. from 18 to 35, the youth definition. Definition of youth. Honorable Bashoff.
Thank you, Mrs. Chair. I want to start with just a small discrepancy, which I hope I didn't miss the explanation of that, or maybe I hope I did. On slide number 29 and 28 and 29, on 28 with the revenue collection, it is stated that other income is 2.5 million. But where the financial results statement of financial performance revenue, the other income is 4.8 million, which means the total revenue is 1 to 3 million as opposed to 1 to 0 million. So is that just a typo or something? And then I just wanted to know also the 173 assessment centers, which are separate from the training institutions. Are those places that are like Olifantsfontein, where the Red Seal was always issued? And is it possible to oversee 173 assessment centers like that? I'm not very well versed in the whole artisan area or territory, but Olifantsfontein had kind of biblical meaning for tradesmen. And then you made two references, one to the two certificates which are different, and the one is discriminated against in the working place. And then also you mentioned that the N4 and N6, that the providers, that so many new providers registered for presenting those qualifications while the department or while you are actually trying to phase it out. I always get mangled up in all the letters, so I don't use them. Do we have to do maybe with something which is market-driven and in which we play against the market? Is there something in the two certificates, in the essence of how the training is presented, that makes it employers actually rather prefer the one to the other? And do we not take away some information that employers actually find useful when trying to employ the best person? And the same with the N4 to N6. When I studied this rather intensively, the whole landscape more than 10 years ago, then it had already been said that the N qualifications were vastly outdated, and it was then supplanted with a unit standards. Now the unit standards are phased out, but still the N4 to N6 are around. Aren't they maybe much more relevant than we think they are? I actually don't understand that at all. Thank you very much, Jay.
Okay. let's just remember that we're dealing with two presentations, SAUCO and this one. Okay. Honorable Getsi.
Thank you very much, Chair.
I said I'll just be brief, right?
And well, maybe to start with the SAUCO ones, since no one has seemed to be engaging their report. Though there is nothing to engage, we can only engage something to seek clarity on, right? Not to seek answers. We should be presented with something. We note that we need clarity here and there. And I think that's why members couldn't engage with their report. But however, there is one thing that I would perhaps want them to speak to, because I know that they are privy enough to that information that we might request. Part of their mandate is to measure, well, the relevance of some qualifications, right? And it's very important to discuss and speak critically of the relevance of other qualifications out there. And I want to challenge them, perhaps, with their sister entity here to say, well, there are some of the courses, I'm sure you are aware, that have been there forever, and we do not see, you know, positive throughput and, you know, even the absorption of the market. You know, how many people get employed after they graduate in certain courses? I can tell you now there are many, and being offered by even universities, not just on the TVET college side, even universities, you know, you go to humanities faculty, you find courses that there are many, and some of them, they're just there because people want to carry a paper to show the community and the society that we have graduated. But in essence, that doesn't really mean anything, because number one, the market and the economy itself does not respond to what is really happening with the kind of qualifications that we offer our students. One graduates and there is no company to hire them at all, because whatever you have done, they can get it from someone who have done engineering, right? They have done that particular course as a module. You did it completely as a mainstream course. So I just want to see, how are you working around that, and perhaps to even advise the department on the other courses that you feel like they are not adding value. They are just there so that, we can keep on making our people to dream that one day they will graduate and work. Well, the other one that I want to touch, the addressing the injustices of the past, right, in relation to the discrimination in education. I think also that is part of the mandate of both entities, if I'm not mistaken. How are we doing that? What kind of results are we coming to? I mean, the conclusion that perhaps you could see that at least here, there is somewhere where we are going, because in the both reports, I couldn't see that anything that speaks to this point, that in 2015 we were here in terms of these injustices. I will give you one part of the injustices. You'd know very well that there are other universities that are not, friendly to African people in terms of enrollment and admission in other courses, right? But if we are going to claim that we are addressing injustices, especially in the discrimination of education, then we need to zoom into that. What explains a scenario or a situation where, for instance, University of Cape Town, they can only take 200 students in medicine? That is their capacity, total capacity of the first years that they can take. And of course, they would have their requirements. This is how you must pass and all that. Then only to find out that 1,000 people apply for that particular space. 1,000 students or prospect students, they apply to be enrolled. So now, these universities, what they do, they use these policies that are very reactionary. We know that, of course, to a certain extent, they are relatively autonomous as universities. But they use this, they call it cosmopolitan policy, where out of that 1,000, they don't consider marks anymore. They consider class, you know, the color, how many Indians were going to enroll, how many whites were going to enroll, and how many blacks were going to enroll. So I'm raising this because so many black people get turned away from the entrances of this university, not on the basis that they couldn't pass with flying colors, but the space of a black person there, it's not enough. So it was occupied by other people with different, you know, coming from different races. You know, you find a white person got lower marks than the person who's been on the waiting list or a student that did not even get space. So we want to check if you are really paying much attention to this a mandate that we have given to yourselves. And I think that goes to both SAQUA and the QCTO. And of course, that will speak to our, that brings me to the third one, and it's the closing skill gap. I mean, I think we should expand much on it so that we understand the concept behind the whole thing, closing skill gap, right? Where are we now in terms of the skill gaps in this country? Because this is what we expect, because we cannot just, you cannot just bring an issue and expect us to be hypothetical about it and assume that this is where we are and this is where we're going and hope that things are the way we are imagining. There's also a fundamental realignment of our education system. I want to check what is it really being done. Well, because we are aware, because the education system of our country, of course, you have alluded that it is informed by the economic policy plan that you have alluded, the national development plan and all that. But where are we now? What can you say about the, as I have said in my first point, the kind of courses, the curriculum that is being offered vis-a-vis the kind of absorption that is available out there? Does it respond to the needs of our economy, this education system? Because education system, the way it is, I am of the view that it is moving concurrent with the state of our economy, you know, the exclusiveness state of our economy, how it exclude majority of our people. That is the kind of education it is available in South Africa. Last but not least, the certification issues. I'm told that you have dealt with some of the certification issues, and someone can be able to get their record even if they studied in the 60s, right? Perhaps to help that sector in TVET space, I don't know what kind of advice you can give them, because there's a huge backlog of certification there. You know, students, they study and from N1 to N6, it has been 15 years, some of them 15 years waiting to be certified. And if you are able to unearth a certificate or a document as far back as the 60s, clearly you can be able to then assist in that space of TVET colleges. I think let me leave it there, Chair. Thanks.
Okay. That was a very brief input. Very brief input. Yeah, so Honorable Yap.
Thank you, Chair. Let me welcome the presentations that have been given to us this afternoon and from the morning. Well, I'm going to be very brief. in the practical sense of the word.
As brief as the previous speaker.
No. Much, much more brief. I have noticed in recent times that the number of cases of people with fake qualifications, falsified qualifications in the media has spiked. And I remember a particular case where the CEO of SACA had to respond in Tshwane on the qualification saga relating to the chief of emergency services. What worries me is that it doesn't seem like SACA has teeth to bite when people falsify qualifications or present fake qualifications. It doesn't seem like there's an instrument at their disposal that can allow them to, through a process, force institutions to withdraw these people. Because these people's qualifications are discovered that they are fake and they keep on working. The chief of emergency in Tshwane is still the chief of emergency. Even after the statement that was issued by SACA that we do not have such a qualification here on record. And it's a problem because if you have an institution of government that is given a mandate but is not given the teeth to execute on that mandate, it renders them almost a ceremonial in nature. Not undermining the role that SACA plays, but I'm just saying perhaps we should look at the fact that some of the abilities of SACA should be able to have effect when they make recommendations against those who have fake qualifications, and they have proven that these people do not have the requisite qualifications that they claim to have, that the institution that hires that person will be compelled to withdraw them, and other processes unfold thereafter. I don't want to call it consequence management, but I want to call it rectification. Because someone who gets a job on the basis of lying and using fraudulent qualifications, that problem needs to be rectified. The second issue I want to speak to in this instance speaks to, and I think maybe both SACA and the QCTO can respond to this. In the TVET space, students go to school to study theory for a specified amount of time, and then they are required to go and get hands-on training to complete the qualification. Who bears the onus of this hands-on training? Is it the student or is it the government, the higher education and training regulatory space? Who bears the onus of making sure that this student, who's probably disadvantaged, who does not have connections, gets the necessary or required hands-on training to complete their qualification? Do we have the requisite capacity in the market that is able to absorb these students for that purpose in order to acquire their qualifications? Is there a process that is applied to ensure that they do not just stop at theory, they are also able to complete within a reasonable period of time? Can we have that demonstrated, if there is, where those centers are? And how much capacity do they have? And how many qualifications or how many students have they processed in the past versus students who have passed the theory component of their studies? Can we have those statistics? We want to see something. The last thing,
I want to that, see something.
Yes, yes, Chair. We want to see something.
Okay.
We want to see something. Indeed. The CEO of QCTO makes reference to putting together qualifications that are market-driven for the market, by the market. I think I'm quoting him correctly when I say, he says they are putting together qualifications for the market, by the market. And I want to understand how that process, from cradle to grave, how is it structured? So that we understand that these qualifications that are created for the market, by the market, somewhere in the process you don't find qualifications that are rendered obsolete because of a rapid development of technologies somewhere in the intervening period. Just the explanation on how that relationship is handled to ensure that it's sustainable and that the qualifications that are given out and or established do not get rendered obsolete in the near future or with a rapid passage of time as they are developed together with the private sector and or the market, as the CEO has correctly said it. Thank you, Chair. That was brief.
Yeah. There's a redefinition of being brief in this committee. Honorable, let's see.
Thank you very much, Chair. Also, let's welcome both presentations. And maybe let me be the first one to disagree with some of the members here that there was no presentation from the Qualifications Authority. I think there was a presentation. I think the performance plan, as it pertains to the whole, the performance plan was good, just that we're not happy with how they put their summary, the summary of that particular plan. But there is a good work that is happening that you guys are doing at South Africa. And I don't think it's fair that we don't commend you for doing good. So I thought I must start there. while edit the presentation, maybe next time we must have an agreement on what is it that we want to see in a presentation from the entities that we are meeting, so that we make it easier for all of us. Sometimes we might be assuming we're on the same page, whereas we're not. I think that will assist us a great deal. And what we don't want, definitely, I can guarantee you now, is the small font. We struggled to see there. There was a graph there that we tried to read, we could not see. But I think other details, we must agree that the committee with yourselves there, we must be on the same page. We must congratulate yourselves again, South African Qualifications Authority. I've not heard of scandals generally surrounding yourselves. And I think for quite some time I've tried to follow. and I must say that you have a fairly positive image about yourself, something different, with other entities, especially with us. So I think we must also commend you for that. Chair, you pride yourself when you say you've got, this was your 23rd consecutive unqualified audit. Of course, sometimes it was unqualified with comments or without anything, but I think it's very good. It means you understand what is it that you want to achieve. Generally, as a country, we want to go, and I think we want to commend you. On your presentation, you spoke about by the CEO, there's an issue somewhere there that you had 14 resignations somewhere. So just wanted to find out what are the issues, why the exodus of personnel there. And CEO, also read somewhere that in the fifth parliament, the previous term, this committee agreed with yourselves that you were underfunded the previous year or the year before the year in under review. But now you have an underspending of about 8.7%. Maybe take us through what are the issues. 8.7% that amounts to over 10 million. I think it's 11.2 million if I remember where I saw that part. The rector on that NLRD from page 14 to 16, that database of yours, it looks, you know, the numbers are very good. They look convincing. But the reality is that we have, and this one I'm going to pose to both yourselves. Reality is that we do have a lot of fly-by-night institutions or colleges or whoever that claims to be producing qualifications equivalent to what you are producing. Majority of those who fall prey to those fly-by-night things, unfortunately, are the poorest of the poor of this country, who, as Honorable Getty said, can't find space at VETS because of cosmopolitan policies and so forth and so on. They want to go and study somewhere, so they end up at the wrong institutions because ourselves we have not named and shamed these ones. And after 5 months or 3 months having paid, or 2 years having paid, they find out that after getting an employment, sometimes with this certificate, they find out that they have a fraudulent certificate. Sometimes it's not the intention of the perpetrator. What plans do we have? What measures do we have in place to make sure that we eradicate all of these things and we clean up the system? I'm asking this because I wanted to propose, maybe let me start there, to both of you. There's this thing, Chair, I'm sure you've heard about it, called Bitcoins. They use a system there called chain block. I'm not sure if you understand. Or blockchain. Blockchain, yes. I have an experience of working in the mine, so chain block, it's something else, Chair. I apologize. That system, I'm asking, why have you not thought of something like that, where we're able to lock qualifications. For an example, anywhere else, if somebody uploads on LinkedIn or somebody applies for a job at who's a QCTO, we're able to check or we're able to link that system with the labor system, like I think NSFAS is doing now with SARS, with TBE system, SASA systems and so forth, where you are only putting in an ID of a person and you are able to track if really what they claim to be having, they really do have in terms of qualifications. And I think as a qualification authority, we can do that. It's something I think maybe why have you not thought about something like that? I think it will assist the country a great deal. come by the economy of this country will not suffer because a table who wears nothing can't claim to have worked at SACWA, for an example, and having had this experience, and I'm running the economy of that, but I'm running the business down because I don't know anything. Some businesses have failed because of that thing of fake news. secondly, to QCTO, I've also realized that you have underspent greatly, 20% in fact, from what you got from us. It's a lot of money, I just forgot to write it down. But in total, you have underspent, I think, about 31 or something percent. It's a serious underspending. And some of the tech, in fact, I also saw on your APP targets, you have only achieved 59% of them. And when you check your reasons, that, okay, 100% of them are from administration. Is it because of lack of staff? The one, I know you are seriously understaffed. You are operating at serious reserves. In terms of staff, you had a budget. You did not, I heard now that the CFO said it's because of the office space, probably they don't have, they do need people, but they don't know where they are going to work from, something like that. I think that for me sounds like we're making excuses or something. I think I've also just calculated now that from then, this underspending, you've only spent 55%, 55.2% of your budget went well to employee costs. And that is why you have so much money left. You have 154 vacancies. It means you are only operating at a staff complement of 36% of what you need. Serious understaff. It means you are not going to reach your targets. It means in the next financial year, we are going to have serious, we are going to sweat to get funding because those who are responsible for that, they are not going to agree. They are going to say, we gave you 10 rents, we said you must hire 10 people, you gave us, you only hired 3 and the whole year you managed with 3. So it means if we are going to grant you anything, you must get 2-5. I know the issue of space you spoke about, I think I agree when you talk about the issue of maintaining a place that is too expensive and it's not yours. I think I'm sold on that part, but I'm saying maybe we must move in with speed. We must not have issues that are not going to. I think on SDPs, I've spoken about it, except this one here. You said you are worried about SEO, you are worried about the number of SDP skills development providers that are coming to you and saying you must accredit them to train or to offer N4 to N6. Now you are worried because of the value of this thing, because you can't even have, I think this is what you meant, you can't even have, or you don't even have a say on the curriculum that they may be offering to students. Now that is a serious worry. It's a serious worry because it means we might be having loopholes in the system. I was hoping to hear you say, I heard you said something about legislation doesn't allow you not to, if they qualify and so forth, but maybe you must say to us, you honorable members as legislators, can you look into this matter, because it then puts the organization at a point where they may it may be rendered redundant. People, by law, you know, not intended, but it might. But the law might render yourselves redundant, because if we're giving you power to make or to do quality assurance, but we're also saying if Honorable Yabo here comes with a company that, according to you, might be teaching learnership on trade, on bargaining, on artisanship, but teaching them about OCD, for an example, and you can't do anything about it, how do you then accredit those people? So maybe we must have a conversation. You must be clear. For the problem here might be law or legislation that prohibits us from taking such, so that we are able to assist and check what is it that we can do in solving such problems. On slide 33, where is that slide? On office remodeling, CFO, I saw that there were okay, I can't find it, but you said the thing has been approved in March. Yeah, the thing is approved in March. There's a but the contracting is not finalized. Maybe take us through what are the issues, because March, and April, May, June, we're now in the seventh month, and if things are approved and they take so long, maybe assist us. And also, why has work not commenced if things are moving? But lastly, Chair, I want to ask the QCTO. Honorable Gates also touched on this. He says, QCTO says they seek to close the skills gap. I want to ask what practical interventions have you planned or implemented to deal with this thing of closing the skills gap in relation to what we spoke about earlier, the fourth industrial revolution, jobs of the future and technology. I think this one, you know, I'm just giving it to you, CEO, to shine. You know, where I come from, when a person says, I'm giving you to shine, I'm just giving you to when you close, at least you can close with this one. Thank you very much.
Okay. That was the last one. Was it not the last question? Okay. And Honorable Mananiso has got some question for Sakwaya. Just brief. Not as brief, but to the point.
Thank you very much, Chair. My questions are very short because members have covered a lot. I think we need to figure out a way on how timeframes for whatever remedial action, this goes to both entities, whatever remedial action that we want to take upon our inability to meet our targets, the timeframes of that remedial action needs to be somehow highlighted, that this is, we were unable to meet this particular target and we're hoping that by this time we'll be able to address that particular issue, or we'll be able to place whatever remedial action on the factors that were contributing to our inability to meet our targets. And then I think it's very important that I just reiterate the importance of solving the crisis in TVET and partnering up with private sector to become part and parcel of the solution. And I think these entities could become motive forces or lobby groups that can go out into and have conversations with private sector on the value of the qualifications that comes out of TVETs, because we can't send thousands of our students to TVET colleges and then they're unemployed or unemployable or, you know, and I mean even the type of, and I don't know, I'm, you know, Chair, I've been having this conversation with Honorable Itzia as to who exact, whose responsibility it is exactly to address this issue of the value of the TVET qualification. And pardon us if we're speaking to the wrong entities, but we think we're quite close to the right entities right now because it's just not working. It's absolutely not working. And there are a few that are working and there are a few good stories that are coming out of a few institutions. And when I say few, I mean really few, because even if we look at the amount of young people who are able to enter institutions of higher learning, being the three, like, so just not even universities, it's still like a minority in our country. And the ones who succeed in both universities and TVETs, it's a minority. But the majority of the most marginalized in our society find themselves in TVET colleges that are producing young people whose degree value will never be looked at by someone. Well, the chances are very slim for them to be looked at. I mean, I just take university students who have their degrees, and they themselves find it very hard to be employed. Look at, I mean, now we're competing about how many master's degrees you have. Not even how many, if you have a master's degree, but how many master's degrees you have and from which university. So we really need to figure out how we can all put our hands in and leveling out the playing field for within various institutions of higher learning. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. so I hope you managed to take the points. Oh, Mananis.
Thank you, Chairperson, and Teboho, thanks for rescuing us. It wouldn't be fair for SAQA to sit here the next thing we don't interrogate their report. I had a few questions, and some of the questions that I've asked QCTO, it must go back to you, because on your report, you have indicated the issue of women and men, but not an issue of young people. It's not reflecting if it's part and parcel of your plans in terms of employing them or are they employed. The other thing is, on the issue that Teboho asked on the issue of resignation, can we get some clarity in terms of why these people are resigning as well? And my recommendation with you is with regards to you saying that you go to people for public advocacy when you are invited, I want to check if in your future plans can you include outreach programs without being invited? Because I could imagine if you have interns in your institutions and these people, they don't have work to do. So at least you must have an outreach program without being invited by any entity in terms of ensuring that you bring SAQA to our people. Lastly, Chairperson, okay, on the report structure, they have social responsibility as one of the structures. And the only thing that you have reported on is that you conducted a program in Pretoria during Mandela Day. So what is this particular office doing when we don't have Mandela Day? Because it's part and parcel of your day-to-day business. So if possible, can you indicate in terms of who are you assisting? What are your social responsibility programs? Because this one of buying uniforms, I can even do that with my money. So I want, if you have tangible, bigger programs that you do for social responsibilities, and if you don't have, it's fine in future. Please make sure that you have serious programs that has to do with social responsibilities, not only buying uniforms and other things. But if there's a need for a library, to just build a library for a certain school, maybe a special school, so that you can timelessly take your documents for information that library, do something like this, not these things of Smolanyana projects for Mandela Day. Thank you.
Thank you. QCTO, the the performance, 59% performance, is not satisfactory. It's not acceptable. Especially given the fact that you had enough resources. You had you've got a surplus of about 30 million. And yet you spent only 39%. I understand the fact that you had to increase the indicators, performance indicators. But 59% performance of your organization is not acceptable to us. We want you to be in the 80s, probably even in the 90s. Earlier on, we were speaking about a clean audit versus the impact. Okay, well, meeting the performance target, but what is the impact? So you are getting a clean audit. You are doing well financially. But you must meet the targets that you have set for yourself. 59% in some other institution is a failure. You start passing when you get 60. So I think you must pull up your socks there, but otherwise I think financially the CFO is making a good impression that he's on top of his game. But if you can just answer me on that issue of 17 million that has been provided for. And there is one indicator there that instead of having 20, it's 80. I don't know at what point did you pick that one up during the development of the APP, so during the year when we were executing. Who was responsible for that? If you can just take us through that. SACWA, you guys did well. Audit outcome improved. Performance-wise, it's fine. But you disappointed us with how you presented your report here today. You see how QCTO presented there. What you plan to achieve, what was the achievement, the performance, program by program. Of course, you can tell us about the highlights. It's fine. We want to hear the highlights. But we are here to understand what exactly did you do? What did you plan to do? What did you do? So just the mere saying that we expected you to read. So if you expected us to read, why then are you here? Because we could have just read the whole thing. We are here because you have tabled, and now we are going to present, and now we will interrogate the report. So please, in future, do as expected. I think if you didn't do well, we're going to say to you, go and sort out your report and come back. Come back to us. But it's now, we are at the beginning of the sixth parliament, so you know our expectation that in future when you come, this is how things must be done. But I'm sure you've got the questions. Can we please start responding to those questions? Let's start with the SACWA.
Chairperson and members,
In terms of the questions that was posed to us, let me first of all talk about information ones. The question about statistics on qualifications, we have produced a number of reports what we will do, particularly with regard to how many of what kind of qualification has been produced. We will certainly make that available to the committee. The second point I want to make is that we produced a report where we've outlined that over the last 20 years that the education and training system has produced qualifications that has actually increased 10% every year. Now, so in other words, I think in broad terms, of, you know, what that report is doing is saying that the problem, you know, is not the education system in terms of producing qualified people. But there's a serious problem with the academic, with the economic situation. So that is where one is to look for in terms of where the issue is. again, what we will do is to, we've got this 20-year document that we have put together. We can share that with the committee. The other question about whether SAQA has got teeth or not, I would say that at the moment, if one looks at the legislation, in fact, there isn't teeth in terms of that, but the NQF Amendment Act has actually brought the teeth that was that went through this parliament. The president signed it on the 13th of August, and on the 19th of August it was released for public information. Now the president must proclaim that piece of legislation. If that is proclaimed, then in fact SAQA will have teeth. And the way in which the legislation is put together is that there's a distinction made between misrepresented qualifications and fraudulent qualifications, because as an entity we cannot declare a qualification to be fraudulent. That can only be done by a court of law. So what SAQA can do is to have a list of and to declare a qualification to be misrepresented. So that's the wording that is in the that's in the Amendment Act. Yeah, no, I'm yes. So so what I'm saying with that, when the president you know, puts that into place, then, I mean, there then are particular kinds of things that can happen. Let me comment on the issue about, I mean, as how things are working at the moment. When it comes to government line function departments, there is a directive that was issued by the Minister of Public Service and Administration that compels line function departments to use SAQA to evaluate the qualification or to verify the qualification. Now, when those line function departments submit the qualifications to SAQA and we find, you know, verification process that it is misrepresented, we give the information to the line function department. The line function department is the one that then takes a particular kind of action, you know, against either they appoint a person or they don't appoint a person. I think in most cases, you know, there's clear, there's no appointment and so on. In the case of the point made about the public perception, now when Dirk reported earlier this morning, he was saying that if one looks at the number of misrepresented qualifications that we pick up, it is really about 1% of the total number that is coming to us. And the reason for that is because there's a deterrent that is built into it. So right up front, the individual must indicate that if he or she is going to submit fake things and so on, that their name is going to appear you know, on the register of misrepresented qualifications. I also reported that we send a list to the Minister of Higher Education, Science and Technology every 2 months. So I'm saying that that is how it works at the moment. And then, of course, what we do, when we find that there's a misrepresented qualification, we would then go to a court of law and we will, you know, we will make a case. We put together an affidavit and we then take it to the police and so on. And of course, the police takes them time to, you know, to investigate. And then the criminal justice process takes its course. So I'm saying that is how it works, you know, at the moment. In the case of the Tshwane situation, is that the municipality did not ask SAQA to make to do a verification of that qualification. So we were approached, in fact, you know, by the media, you know, to comment on, you know, what was stated in a public document. So in that public document, it was stated that the qualification that the person has got is an NCRF level 7. And in fact, you know, that qualification wasn't registered and he doesn't have an NCRF level. So then the question is, who then takes action in that particular case? Quite clearly, you know, it is up to the, you know, to the municipality to take a particular action around that. You know, to, you know, in terms of the current situation.
So can you explain a little bit that situation of Tshwane?
Sorry?
You had to clarify the qualification. And so, then you left it at clarification.
Yes, so I'm saying we clarified that in actual fact that that qualification is not registered on the NQF and therefore it cannot have an NQF level.
Okay, so you just left it at that?
Yes, because, you know, the question always in all of these things, I mean, one of the key things that the NCRF Amendment Act is also dealing with, it's the question is, so who is it that brings the case to, you know, the police? You know, and that is a legal issue that, you know, that at the moment it is not sorted out, but in the NCRF Amendment Act it is sorted out. So what I'm saying is that, you know, that when the Act comes into play, then, you know, we will be able to do a whole number of things that we cannot do at the moment.
So what you are saying is that there was an individual there at the city who occupied a position, and on the basis that he has obtained certain qualification of NQF, whatever NQF level, yeah. And then that person was found to not, or that qualification was found not to have been registered or not accredited, so to speak.
No, it is not that the qualification has not been accredited. The qualification, you see, the qualification in that particular case is a very old qualification that wasn't registered on the NQF. It was never registered. You see, and this is the complication. The complication is that the municipalities are still recognizing those qualifications as okay for people to apply for jobs. So we must make a distinction between, is it registered on the NQF and is it accepted by the employer to hire a person around that? And I'm saying, you know, it is, you know, at the moment, the qualification is not registered. We have said it's not registered. But if the employer says that the employer recognizes the qualification as a basis for employment, then that is what the employer can do. Now, I'm talking about the current legal situation.
Yes.
If we now go into the NQF Amendment Act, the NQF Amendment Act has got a very clear definition.
CEO,
yes.
I want you to help me to understand. Don't be in a hurry. So there is an issue of a qualification not being registered for NQF level, but that does not make it illegal.
Not at the moment.
Is it not all, what is the legal expectation that all qualifications that are being offered in South Africa must be accredited by SAUCO and must be registered for NQF? What is the legal position? Maybe the department can also assist us there.
No, I'm saying that the legal position at the moment is the following, that, you know, there are qualifications that are registered on the NQF, okay? That the provider needs to be accredited and so on. I'm saying in this particular case that we are talking about here is that municipalities have for years been employing people on this particular kind of qualification, and they've accepted that qualification as a qualification that is okay for entry when they make their appointments. And I'm saying it is that legal issue is the issue that must be sorted out.
No, but you don't answer my question.
I am answering the question, I think. Or maybe... You
know. No, I'm asking, what is the legal position? Is the legal position requiring that all providers or all qualifications that are being offered in this country must be registered?
No.
And must have an NQF level. And those that are not registered, therefore, falls outside of the framework. So maybe let's get the department to...
Can I just clarify? I mean, let me say that all qualifications in South Africa that has been offered, if people don't claim that it is registered, they can offer it.
Okay.
That the NQF Amendment Act, what it does, it now puts in place a definition of what an authentic qualification is. Then there are three conditions that it needs to meet. But I'm saying that is not the legal position as we are sitting here today.
Because the thing is that I'm not getting a clear answer from yourself. Let's try the department.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's very important that you are getting registered qualifications that's registered on the NQF.
Registered with what?
It's registered with SAQUA. On the NQF.
Okay.
So that is qualifications that has got value in terms of so what we say, they've got currency, so they can use, and you can use it for mobility from one qualification to another. But then you also get other qualifications that are not registered. For example, a classical example is the Microsoft qualifications. That it's a very sought-after qualification in industry, for example. To be a Microsoft engineer is a very sought-after qualification. But it's an international qualification that's got international and national currency, but it's not registered on the NQF. Now, if you combine them, I think you cannot take it away from the registration of the institution. So if we're looking at registered institutions, all public institutions are deemed registered. So if we talk of public universities, we're talking of public TVET colleges, and we're talking of schools.
And those
and so
ones,
forth.
If they are registered institutions, they must offer registered courses and qualifications.
Not necessarily. No, there's not a one-to-one relation to that. But a non-registered institution cannot offer a registered qualification. So if I'm not registered with the state, if you look at the private institutions, for example, you have to be registered with the state, and then you can offer a registered qualification.
So that qualification which is not registered is not necessarily a fake qualification or something like that?
No. A fake qualification is when somebody says, when a qualification has been offered that's registered on the NQF. Say, for example, we're talking of an NCV. Say a college is offering an NCV course, but the the institution is not registered. It's a bogus college. Then that is the fake qualification, because if it's a bogus college and he's not registered with the institution, he can't offer a registered qualification. Now you get the man in the street who's a bogus college and claim to offer an NCV, for example. That is a fake qualification. But then you get a misrepresented qualification, and that is a total different issue. So it's quite technical, but the relationship is to offer a registered qualification, you must be a registered provider. But the registered provider can, for example, also offer Microsoft courses. If you look at universities, a lot of them are offering the Intel courses, the HP courses, as well as the Microsoft courses. So they are allowed to offer it. There's no control that we as a department have over that.
Okay. All right. It's quite complicated. So in technical sense, you can possess a qualification which is not NQF accredited or SACO accredited, but that is not necessarily fake. So it is up to institutions to say, we will only recognize a qualification that is accredited by SACO, that is, has got NQF level. For instance, that all government institutions needs to recognize that or something like that. Okay, Honorable Yaf.
I am perplexed. And what perplexes me is the fact that we recently had the University of Limpopo come to account on new qualifications that were not accredited and registered. The university itself is a state university. And there was an outcry in the media of the qualifications not being authentic. It sounds like we are a schizophrenic government. We hold people to account for a qualification that's not registered, and yet they are registered. They are a state-owned, they are a state university. And we are told today, we discover today, that in actual fact, for as long as you are a registered institution, you can offer anything. What differs is that it will either be given a technicality, and if the employer accepts what you have studied, then it's up to the employer. That gives me a problem of standards.
Okay. All right. Honorable Boshoff, you want to come and explain? You want to help us?
Sorry, Chairperson. Can I respond to that question specifically?
All right, you'll
because
come
there's
in.
Another there's another dimension that you're bringing in, and that's the accreditation of qualifications.
All right. You'll come in. Let's get Honorable Boshoff.
Honorable Chair, maybe I should just let it go. This is, to me, quite comprehensible. I don't understand the problem, but I'll just let it go.
Okay, what is comprehensive?
Comprehensible. No, it is comprehensible. It's straightforward to me what this is. I mean, if you have a qualification which is not registered, but it has been offered long ago, but the municipality still accept it, then it's fine. But if it's on level 4, you can't go and build a level 5 on that because it's not on the framework. But the employer accepts it, and it can't
be on any other level because there's no NQF level.
Yeah, it can't be on any level.
Yes.
So you can't say it's on this level, I want to build something else on it. But I think this, I actually don't understand. What is the complexity of this?
There is no complexity. There is just a lack of clarity. And the lack of clarity is there is an expectation out there that qualifications that are offered, credible qualifications, must all be registered with SACO. That's the expectation. That we will recognize qualifications that are registered with SACO. Now, and therefore, anything outside of what has been recognized, accredited, is not a legitimate qualification. You see? Okay, no, no, it's fine. I've heard your view, so. All right.
Honorable Chief, my son was on a game farm where they offered a course. Only one part of this course was certified and was with an institution, but the owner of the, call it a college or the academy, was quite open about it, saying this part is on SAQWA, it's registered, everything is official, the rest they are not. But game farms and reserves very much like to employ students who did this, although it's not. So it's an example which provides clarity.
Yeah, no, no. It's a very simplistic one, but we are talking about public institutions here. Not a friend of mine has been trained by my friend here, and I know my friend is a sharpshooter, so if he's trained by my friend, it's not that logic. Talking about public institution, but it's fine. I think let's proceed. We understand the issues and the dynamics around this.
Thank you, Mr.
But ideally, institutions should be accepting qualifications that are registered with SAQWA. And if a qualification is not registered, those who are offering it, if it has got value, they must always go to SAQWA and want to register those. It's as simple as that. If it has got value, it can meet certain standards of academic offerings or whatever offerings they may be, let it be registered so that it's simple for those who are holding those qualifications. That for me is the, it should be the point about the whole thing. So if those who are offering are not able to get it registered, it means there's something wrong with their offerings at the end of the day. Okay, I'm just finalize that and then let's get back to the CEO.
Thanks, Mr. Jefferson. I think it's important that we've got registered qualifications with SAQWA, and then we've got registered institutions. And in the case of Limpopo, because it's a public institution, they are registered with the state. But then there's another part between the two that we must know, and that is the accreditation. So that is where the Quality Council comes in. So the University of Limpopo must be accredited to offer that registered qualification of SAQWA. So you've got registration of the qualification, registration of the institution, and then accreditation to offer that qualification. And that is where the Quality Council comes in. So Limpopo, in this case, it was a registered qualification, it was a registered institution, but Limpopo was not accredited to offer that BA degree, or that was I think it was a law degree that we specifically referred to. So it's accreditation that was missing.
No, that was a short course on funeral policy.
Yeah, it wasn't registered on the NQF. It wasn't registered at all.
Short course,
it's a short course.
She's also confusing herself, so. The whole thing is confused. Yellow egg is Dear Makar.
Chairperson, I don't think it's Dear Makar.
On a lighter note.
I don't think it's Dear Makar. It is. There's an expectation, as you were saying, but there's a legal situation, in fact, that we need to deal with. And the point that I'm making from the beginning, I'm saying, if the NQF Amendment Act comes in, then the expectation and the legal position will be aligned. That's the point that I made.
Okay. All right, let's step off that one.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, the question about the savings, I mean, people speak about underspending and we speak about savings. We're trying our best to save money and so on. So I'm going to ask Precious to deal with that. I just want to deal with this one question about resignations. Chairperson, there are 14 people who have resigned, not resigned, there are 14 people who terminated. One person died. So the point for me is, if you have 14 out of a total of 190 people, 187, it is this normal attrition. You know, people look at other opportunities and they go there. You know, you can't hold them back. The question at one, I think for me it's more, I would be more worried if, for example, we have an attrition rate that is higher than the average in the country. I mean, this, we are talking really about, 10%, you know, that kind of thing. So it is it's a normal attrition rate. It is not something to worry about. I think what we also do with each and every one of the people who leave, we've got exit interviews, we try to understand why they're leaving and so on, and we then, you know, have a look at that. We have got a retention strategy, we've got the succession planning, and all the other good things that we need to have with regard to HR. Chair, I just want to ask Precious to just deal with the savings.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. Yes, we reported an underspending or slash savings of total amount is 11.2 million rand. Included in that 11.2 million rand is 3.2 from vacancies, the vacancies that we had. For example, I know that we had vacancies in IT, the IT field, and also research. If you think about those positions, it takes a while to get the people. Like with the IT people, we are competing with the private sector. So the benefits that they are getting that side, they are more lucrative than what we have at SACCO. So it takes a while to get the people. Like you'll find out that people, they accept the offer, and then after a while, then before they even start, then they reject the offer and say they find a job somewhere else. So we are competing with the private sector. So it takes a while to fill some of the positions that we find ourselves having. And then also included in that amount is the general expenses. So more than half of that amount is sitting under commitments. We go through the SCM or the supply chain management process. For example, in government, if you want to buy something that is more than 500,000, you need to go through a tender process. So we go through the tender process, then you appoint. So in this case, some of these projects, we had appointed people to do the work or service providers to do the work or to deliver the goods. But the work was completed after year end, like in April or May 2019. So in that case, in terms of the accounting principle, you cannot recognize the expense. You disclose it under commitments. And then when the project is complete, that's when you can recognize the expense. So hence then it results to the underspending. But in this current year, you find that some of the projects are completed, then we've expensed those amounts. So it's timing differences for some. Thank you.
Will that be the conclusion of the responses from SAQA? All right. QCTO, you can take over.
Thank you. I'm going to try to categorize my response in terms of the questions, because I think it was questions cut across, if that's in order. I think the first one, which I'll just suggest very quickly, is the issue of the resignations and management versus expertise. We report in the annual report based on a fixed template, which doesn't make provision for us to give the youth count, but I've just consulted with my very youthful CFO here. I think we are probably would be sitting at about 40% youth in the organization. So, and we are making a concerted effort that people climb up in the organization, from practitioner then to assistant director, etc. So we really take that very strongly. Then very quickly on the advocacy, in the annual report we do indicate that any invite we get, even if it's the rural areas, our market team is out there to indicate what the QCTO does and to advise. We were also part of the SABC thing, so we went with all 11 languages and communicated our message. So we are exploiting whatever platform we do get in terms of advocacy. In terms of the TVETs, I mean, that's I think the sentiments expressed is a huge one. You know, in terms of what's the value of the qualifications, the N4, 5, and 6. I just want to correct that those are not necessarily qualifications. They are registered as part qualifications, leading to the only qualification it leads to is a diploma. And the only time a candidate gets that diploma is after they've completed the necessary work experience. And I think that's where the system becomes unstuck, that they exit the TVET college with a 4, 5, and 6 certificate, and then are left on their own to get their work spaces, and then come back to get a national diploma. In terms of stats, we did some rough work. Well, it's not even rough work. If you look at the DHET report, a statistical report, I think it's of last year, less than 10% of the candidates who complete N6 then actually come through with the diploma. So we're sitting with a real challenge. And that's one of the reasons why I indicated that the QCTO has realigned the TVET colleges into occupational qualifications so that the work experience is brought inside, so that we don't have learners walking around just with theory components. Ideally, after the N4, which is 6 months, the learner ought to have practicals for 6 months, and then N5 in 6 months, etc. Unfortunately, the system does not allow for that, and they just go straight through N4, 5, and 6, and walk away from a college with just theory. I've also, you know, indicated that part of the issue is the uptake of our occupational qualifications at TVET colleges. It's because of the particular funding model at this point in time, but I know we've raised it and the department is looking at it. TVET colleges are only funded for the N courses and the NCV. And the occupational qualifications, as I also indicated, is just being piloted at 13 colleges. So the system is moving, but I think we need to move at a faster pace so that we can, you know, address this particular issue that's facing the TVET colleges. I think that would kind of sum up, you know, the TVET, and certainly the N4 to N6 private providers. My concern is raised in that context, that it's very easy to set up a provider, N4, 5, and 6, and you just offer the theory. So all you need is a classroom and a lecturer, and off you go. There's no practicals associated with it, and so the concern was raised in that context as well. In terms of the certificate issue that was raised, the discriminatory practice under the Manpower Act was that certain industries would only then employ you if you had gone through a contracted apprenticeship. But if you had been somebody who's been doing the job for 5 or 6 years and when wrote the same trade test, but you were granted two different certificates, certain industries would prefer you because you had a contracted apprenticeship. Yet the other person, through the trade test, the exact same trade test, would have the exact same competencies. So when we replace that with the Skills Development Act and the one certificate, it does away with that. So even if a learner goes through a contracted apprenticeship or through an RPL route, it does not make that distinction, so that RPL candidates will not necessarily be disadvantaged in the job market. And that's one of the ways we hope to address the other issue that was raised. How are we addressing the imbalances and injustices of the past? We don't want to make those kind of distinctions. That's very quickly on the certification. You're quite correct in terms of the 173 assessment centers. Olifantsfontein prior was the only place you could go and get a trade test. As we sit at the moment, there are over 500 trade test centers across the country. And so the QCTO, together with the department, the National Artisan Moderating Body, is auditing these trade test centers that were previously accredited. And then as we do that, if they meet the standards, we bring them onto QCTO database. If they don't meet the standards, then obviously discontinue with the. They will have to discontinue with the assessments. I think that takes care of that. In terms of how we're closing the skills gap, and I'll link that to the qualifications issue, when I made the comment, qualifications for industry by industry, industry understands what's the needs, especially now with the 4IR and where the industry is moving. So when we want to develop a qualification, we invite industry. So we could fill a room up with over 300-400 people. It goes out to everybody where the discussions are. We call it a scoping meeting where the industry decides what do they want in that qualification. Out of that process, it gets refined, and then a development team gets extracted from that group under the guidance of the QCTO, who then develop the qualification. It's then bounced off the bigger group again before it goes to through our processes and then to SAQWA for registration. One of the key things in that process is international compatibility. So we always have to, SAQWA wouldn't register qualification unless we've conducted that exercise of international compatibility. So the new qualifications we're putting out are all, you know, internationally comparable. The issue of the workplace is a huge issue. There are insufficient workspaces. So the QCTO in its model, I said the workplace experience is compulsory. We have re-looked at that in our framework that needs to be approved. Certainly, certain qualifications would need more work experience than others. Some may need 3 months, and some may need 6 months, and again, that is dictated to by industry as to how much of time should the individual spend in industry before they could be deemed to be qualified, apart from the knowledge and the practical that they would get at the institution. And then in terms of that, and I was given an opportunity to shine, I think that, just on the top of my head, three of the qualifications that the QCTO is putting out. One is the toolmaker, where there are over 1,600 learners that the Department of Trade and Industry, DTI, have on that program. It ticks all of the boxes of 4IR, from the reports we get. And toolmaker at level 5, previously, it was just called fitting and turning at a particular level. So it actually got elevated in terms of the level of the qualification, as well as the complexity of what is it to be a toolmaker. You might also be interested to know that we have one of the world's best welding qualification. Every single international welding code has been built into that qualification. And again, it's because it's industry involvement in developing the qualifications. We're also developing qualifications for solar voltaic, for solar. A lot of our qualifications we are re-looking at, although they were registered 5 years ago, to ensure that they meet the issues of, the green economy as well as now 4IR. But that's a process that we will have to engage in going forward. And then I think, lastly, we would just note the concern raised by the chairperson that the performance is not satisfactory. I indicated that, when I presented as well, that we are not satisfied entirely with that, and we will be making every effort to meet the 80% target. I'll quickly hand over to the CFO just to talk about the 17 million and et cetera.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. As a youth, I'll... I'll be quick. I want to address the issue that the outgoing chairperson, the chairperson who has gone out, the chairperson who has gone out has raised about the 17 million. Why we want to refurbish a building that we do not own. The issue of the 17 million is it is broken down into certain components. The open plan is not going to allow the current furniture that we have. So the building we're going to use about 6 million. These are estimates that have been given by architect. 6 million towards the build is two buildings that we are renting in the same sort of campus. And the 10 million actually goes to furniture. In fact, I think the cost can be much lower because we would have to dispose the current furniture that we have, you know, which is not suitable for open plan. You know, to move from 95 workstations to about 250 workstations, it's quite massive. Also, we have talked to the landlord of the building, and with the possibility of us negotiating to buy the building, and the landlord has given us a green light. We are going to the department, you know, for the letter of support. We've already drafted that, and we'll go to the minister. The argument is that it is better. We've also talked to our bankers because, as a public entity, currently, you know, we're not allowed to borrow. But we have talked to our bankers to say, if we were to buy this building, how much can you give us if we can get approval from National Treasury, so that we'd rather pay a bond when we own the building rather than to pay rent and we don't own the building. And our bankers, have given us a letter to say we can fund you to the amount that you want. So in that building, we've been there, we've put in some money. It is centrally located and a whole lot of things. So it is quite something that we've really put thought about it. And if we can get similar structures, it's quite difficult. I would also want to answer the Honorable Tabo for the approval that he said, why is it taking so long that you got approval in March? The approval came from National Treasury on the 27th of March, which means within the 3 days to year end, you cannot contract. Now, the moment there is cash at 31 March, you have to apply again to utilize that cash. And we've applied up to now, we still haven't got the response. But we've got all systems ready, all ACM processes ready. Once the approval has been given, we're going to contract. And I've been bothering National Treasury about it. They've given us our word that they are going to expedite that. So I think when we come to report next time, I will be reporting a different structure, but sometimes the bureaucracy kind of ties us up. I want to respond to Honorable Boshoff on the revenue. The revenue is that you indicated to other revenue of, I think it's 2.5, which is different from the 4 of other income. The revenue collection is actual cash that I'm talking about. On the financial statements, we had a donation in terms of our MIS system amounting to 2.3. It's just an accounting entry. When a donation comes, it goes to the asset and the revenue corresponding. So on the financial statements, you find that it is in there, but it's not a cash item. Hence, that's why it is not there. Then I think lastly, on the under expenditure in terms of employing on vacancies, the issue that we had alluded to and what the CEO alluded to is the approval of the business case in terms of the revoking strategy from the CETAs. The moment we take all those functions, we need the personnel. Currently, with this amount we had budgeted that we're going to take, we can employ today, but next year we don't have guarantee of the budget of those employees. That is the major challenge. What's that funding? Because the good thing is the NSDP clearly says that funds follows function. But nothing else, there's just that statement, and that is the engagement, and I'm happy that the department is at the forefront of that, and we are talking with the CETAs. The moment that guaranteed funding is there, we would employ, and we know that perpetually we've got the budget. Currently, we can employ in this financial year, but we've got no budget in the next financial year. That is the two challenges that we face, I think. And then lastly, I think the CEO on advocacy, he forgot to mention that every year we do roadshows in all the provinces on advocacy, you know, all the provinces, and we are continuing to do that so that most people don't know the QCTO, and we are trying to make sure that we do that. Thank you, Chair.
Any to say? All right, I think that, honorable members, if there are no other questions, I think that's the end of our meeting. I think, just in closing, this is the beginning of a five-year journey, and we all have to find a way to find one another and be patient with one another, because at the center of all of this, it's the country. I think if we don't find a way to cooperate, we're not doing an injustice to each other. It's not about how the chairs or the CEOs are going to feel when they get home, if they're going to be upset or not, if they feel undermined or not, or if we feel undermined as the honorable members or not. It speaks to the people of this country, the young people of this country, the future of this country. And I think if we can all keep that in mind, I think we can do a lot. I always preach, I think I call it a preaching now, that in this country, definitely, there are issues around funds, there are issues around our policies. Our policies can definitely be made more progressive. There are issues around infrastructure, but at the core of all of this, I think there is work being done. I think when you look at the South African Qualifications Authority, you look at QCTO, you look at the department and various other entities, there is an attempt to do the work. But there's somehow where it goes wrong, you know. And for me, that speaks to ensuring that we have a society that is socially connected, a society of from our president all the way to the nurse, all the way to the staff in whatever government entity. Every single person understands how they have a role to play in building this country. So I think that is generally the nature in which this committee engages, and we truly hope to see you soon, and we thank you for the contributions that you made today. Thank you.
Sorry, Chair, just to, on behalf of the QCTO, to thank the honourable members for their, I think, and applaud your depth of insight, and to assure you that in the next presentation we certainly would have enough detail to feed that appetite. Thank you.
Honourable members, the House, just 1 second. I think the Chair from the South African Quality Authorities would like to say something. If you can just spare her one minute, I think. I think she'll be even shorter than that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to share the same sentiments as expressed by the Deputy Chair of the QCTO. I reiterate that the misunderstanding is regrettable. As SAQA, we believe in lifelong learning and continuous improvement. We will apply that for sure for the future. Thank you so much.